want you to picture a neighborhood you know bulldozed, as in blocks of homes and businesses, 1,000 families displaced. That happened to Baltimore in the 1970s, when a downtown highway was built smack in the middle of a thriving black neighborhood. It is now called the Highway to Nowhere, as it was never fully completed due to environmental opposition, but the damage was already done to West Baltimore. Now, the city is trying to undo that with federal money it's applying for. With us to talk about this is Nika Namdi. She lives in West Baltimore and is founder of the social justice group Fight Blight Be More. Hi, Nika.
Hello.
Give us a picture of the affected neighborhood in West Baltimore when you kind of think of the impact of this highway decision a generation ago. Do you still see it?
Absolutely. I can physically, you know, see it. It's a highway. It goes nowhere. It goes about 1 mile, and it helps to transport people into and out of the city. People into the city, obviously, to make their money working downtown and then transporting, you know, their earnings and their tax dollars outside of the city. But also when you look at Harlem Park, which is to the north of the highway, Harlem Park is roughly 2,000 parcels mm-hmm. in size, and half of them are either demolished or vacant lots or are properties that are in poor condition, that are blighted in general. And that begins in the 1950s. That begins with the displacement of people in order to build a highway to nowhere. So in a way, Harlem Park and Poppleton have been rendered almost ghost towns. You know, we're mm-hmm. here working, we're here living, we're here playing, but we aren't here with the fullness of community, you know, that would otherwise have been if not for the construction of the highway to nowhere.
And you live right next to this highway, just north of this highway. Have you spoken to your neighbors about their own specific stories of the impact on this current generation, perhaps children, perhaps grandchildren of people who lived there or people who got kicked out of their homes?
Absolutely. It's a common conversation that we're having, because it's important for people to understand the harm that was actually caused by federal policy and local and state application of federal policy. Mm-hmm. There's an elder who shares a story about how one day she had a friend and she played with her every day. And then the next day she was literally gone. Her and her family were disappeared. And as she became an adult and is still working in community, she knows now that that disappearance was caused by that family being displaced as a result of their home being taken by eminent domain for the highway to build the highway to nowhere.
Now, I understand. I mean, this has happened in many American cities. I was reporting not long ago in Charlottesville, Virginia, where the thriving black neighborhood Vinegar Hill, similar story. In general, how did this happen? In Baltimore, it was in the 70s. Well, who had the loudest voice to make this highway happen?
So I think it's a confluence of things. Of course, if you know anything about Robert Moses, he was one of the architects of highway policy impacting New York, Chicago, St. Augustine, Florida, like you mentioned, Vinegar Hill. And that was supported, of course, by the auto industry. It was supported by the suburbanization and the drive for white flight. All of those things kind of convened together to destroy black communities. And some of it, if you look very closely at the timing, these decisions were made in many ways as a punishment to black people and black communities for speaking out during the civil rights movement. If you look at St. Augustine, Florida, that is a prime example of a highway being run through a community that had spent a lot of time mobilizing and organizing in order to access their rights. And so that coalescence was used as a way to stop the march, to stop the progression of black people in America toward not just freedom, which is individual, but also to liberation, which is collective, as my sister Shauna Mary Brown would say.
Yeah. So now, as you know, Baltimore is applying for federal money from the new infrastructure law to address this. How do you think this problem should be fixed? Does it make sense to, I don't know, get rid of the freeway? Is that the answer or not the answer?
I think the answer lies in what people who were displaced or their heirs, and what people who are currently living in community see as the vision. My vision for what could happen isn't the sole or only vision, but I definitely think that whatever is to come should be led by the people living there and the people displaced, but also should result in ownership opportunities, both of houses and, you know, businesses. We live under food apartheid. There's no grocery store in those areas. So we definitely need hyper-localized food. There are all types of things that really need to be put in place to meet the needs of the people who are there. And there also needs to be a reckoning so that folks who were displaced have an opportunity and are prioritized in both the planning, but in opportunities to return.
Yeah. No, I hear you saying who has a voice is critical to this conversation. Let me tell you about the voice of the Baltimore Department of Transportation. We spoke to the interim director about the question of, you know, if you revamp the area, could it actually gentrify this place? Another displacement of people in that space. And this is what she had to say.
We're finding ways to integrate and make sure that we're not just moving people out. That is in no way the goal, the intent. And my hope is that we pour into their lives and build up communities so that they can feel, you know, like something's been given back to them.
I mean, she said the priorities of the city are to use a space to provide job centers, bike lanes, new housing, that kind of thing. But to be honest, you know, she couldn't offer a definitive plan on this question of gentrification and addressing it or preventing it. And so I want to put that question to you. Do you worry about that possibility?
Absolutely. I would say that I don't worry about it, because the one thing that we are doing is making sure, for instance, that we are stabilizing housing outcomes for legacy residents in Harlem Park and Poppleton right now. Because at the end of the day, we recognize that we cannot afford to trust the government or any of its appendages to do right. We have to be organized and we have to demand redress and repair. And while we're doing those things, while we're, you know, demanding those policies, we also have to be triaging for the damage, you know, the harm right now. So, you know, supporting people with eviction assistance and all of those, all of the things that are available to us.
Because as you see it, I mean, the government is part of what created this problem in the first place, yeah?
Yeah, they're one half of it. It was the government and the banks and, you know, realtors, private industry. They colluded together. So it would be unwise to trust them and then verify. No, we're going to verify and trust as a part of our organizing strategy to make sure that the result is not further ethnic cleansing of Black people in Central West Baltimore.
Yeah. I mean, this is in the center of Baltimore. I'm looking at the map here. It's just north of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, a few blocks from the baseball field, a few blocks from the high-end Baltimore Inner Harbor. I mean, what matters in this location really matters.
Absolutely. And that is one of the reasons why, you know, if we look very carefully at the history, we could see the plan for displacement or neo-urban colonialism playing out if we don't organize and if we don't demand repair, if we don't demand reparations for what has happened in the past. And, you know, Central West Baltimore, it is right by the MARC train station. And we can absolutely see that if we not organize, the long game will be to make that portion of Baltimore somewhat of a suburb of places like D.C.
Nika Nambi is a resident of West Baltimore and the founder of Fight Blight Be More. Nika, thank you so much.
Thank you.